The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Yes, Isolde White is back with me, the psychotherapist and author for the Kids Clinic this week to talk about separation anxiety. So, Isolde, what is separation anxiety?
Well, it's a normal part of a child's development. Children develop a strong, solid attachment bond to their caregivers. And if they have a good, solid attachment bond, they're going to be sad when they're separated from their caregivers. So it's actually a healthy part of development, but I suppose it can be a bit awkward at times if your child has quite a bit of separation anxiety. And so it can sort of start between 7 and 12 months of age and can go on until after 3, 4, you know, starting school. Any of those really big transitions can be tough.
And so, I mean, when you've got a kid whereby it becomes a problem, a real problem, say at the school gates or what have you, I mean, is that just a kind of an innate thing that all kids are different, and or can it be kind of triggered by an event?
It can be a mixture of things. All kids are different. Also, all parents are different. So often you really need to look to the parents' own separation anxiety about their anxiety about leaving the kid, because the kid will feel that. When parents are actually quite calm and very, you know, their nervous system is calm and they're very convinced the child's going to be okay, often the child does way better. And so you'll often see a difference between the mum and the dad when leaving kids at school. And I think, you know, maybe I'm not saying that mums are more anxious, but I think a lot of the time, you know, mothers are more used to being full on attentive, and dads are a little bit more risk taking, a bit calmer. And so often kids do better when dad drops the kid to school.
Loads of people have gotten in touch since I said we were going to talk about this. You know, it's a thing you see, and anyone who's dropped kids to school, if you haven't gone through it yourself, you'll see another parent going through it, you know, and son or daughter kind of crying, clinging on. And teachers, it has to be said, and principals in schools, I mean, they're brilliant by and large at coaxing children in to school or creche. My little girl, here's an interesting question though. My little girl's 8, and for the last 6 months, really bad separation anxiety. She never had it before. But for context, last year we had significant health issues with one of her grandparents requiring 24/7 care. They subsequently passed away. Still significant care needs for the other grandparent, which means some nights I have to go over and cover. Gets really upset if I have to go on sleepover, or even if I go for a walk for an hour. Same with dad. The level of upset has started to improve, but still a feature and really impacting her. So it's that sounds like it's kind of event related.
That's very event related. And so maybe talking to that child a little bit more about death and about people passing and about how that mother is probably very healthy herself and unlikely to be in danger. Because, you know, I think we probably don't talk to children enough and explain enough about these things. And they don't really understand the difference between somebody with old age dying and anybody dying. So you really have to talk them through it. And then just really a lot of the time when an event like that has happened and when a kid is upset like that, trying to give them extra time somewhere else in the day, not to do with the separation, but trying to make sure that you're giving them some extra time and bits during the day, but without making a fuss of it, often really eases out those things.
That's a hugely significant event, you know, losing a grandparent and the other requiring kind of pretty intense care, it sounds
but
like.
It's also the grief of the parents themselves, you know, so the parent themselves had a huge loss.
Yeah.
And all of that energy and all of that grief really impacts the family system. So really being able to talk about it, I think, is helpful.
You know, the way they say kind of, you know, trauma is subjective, and it's, you know, what might be kind of innocuous for one person is very different for somebody else. And I wonder, could an event be much more on the surface innocuous? Like could the child get separated in the supermarket and you might think, oh, there you are. Come on, will you? We're kind of late for swimming or whatever. And suddenly kind of 6 months later, you're wondering why they're bawling, crying, and they won't let you have a babysitter over.
Absolutely. And so trying to talk to them and trying to find out, you know, if anything, you know, with the one with the grief, that one is an easy enough one to talk about. We can identify that quite quickly. But absolutely. And something can have happened in school and they may not fully have words for it or may not fully have words for why it upset them. So really just a lot of the time it's trying to understand what's going on and what the fears are. And then some children at certain ages and this can be just related to their personality type, can develop higher levels of anxiety than other kids, and that may come out in separation anxiety.
And might they then just grow out of it?
Yeah, but it can take a lot of time. You know, they might not want to go on sleepovers. Like, I can remember kids that I knew that wouldn't go on sleepovers till they were well into their teens. You know, so that kind of thing can be very, very real. And I think just with that, patience, because, you know, the chances of them still being like that at 18, 21 are minimal. So some patience and trying to sometimes not give in to the anxiety too much, but not force it. So trying to find a balance between these two things.
I was literally about to say, should you force it? I mean, let's say, for instance, the babysitter and they don't want mum and dad to go out. I can't cope with the idea of you being gone, or I don't want to go to a birthday party or a sleepover. And you think to yourself, well, I mean, they protested the school gate and they managed to go into school. We force that because you kind of have to. You don't want Tuzla at the door saying, why is the kid never going to school? And I know parents will wonder, well, should I just force the babysitter thing? Should I just say, no, you're staying with her and we're going out. We'll be back in an hour.
I think you should force it for a bit, and then you start to do shorter nights out. Like, you might go out for an hour or 30 minutes. And if the child is old enough to understand a timer and stuff, that can help. But, you know, I absolutely think that we have to be a little bit boundaried with our kids and say that we also need to do things for ourselves, and babysitters and things like that are important. But I suppose it's also important to know that nothing untoward occurred with a babysitter. You know, so you just have to balance all of these things. But I think that we can be we can talk too much to kids about their anxiety. And sometimes the more you focus on anxiety, the more that you build it up.
Yeah.
So if you say, well, no, actually, mum and dad actually have to go out tonight, and, you know, we'll be back at this time, and we'll be thinking of you, and blah, blah, you know, you just set it up, and then you leave, and you don't leave with, like, looking back and feeling anxious. You just literally leave.
Yeah. What about the idea that it just becomes habit after a while? Some things, you know, because I know of kids and they grow out of the separation anxiety with regard to some things. They're brilliant. They'll go off on a sleepover, but they won't cut around just to the friend's house. Or that, you know, much more minor things maybe are a bigger thing. And you wonder, to a degree, is this more habit or muscle memory, emotional memory?
Yeah, but sometimes it might be just that different thing requires something different of them. Like, you know, calling around to a friend's house, is the friend definitely going to be there? Is the parent going to answer the door? Do I know what to say to them? There can be a whole set of things like that that you should check in when there's something they don't want to do. But yeah, of course, the more you practice these things, the better. And the more that they're going and doing some activities and doing things after school and going to their football class or their gym class or whatever.
I mean, the difficulty some parents will have listening to this is they think, yeah, but I'll ask him all these bloody questions. He doesn't have an answer. Oh, I don't know,
I don't know. So you can try. And if they have no answers, then keep your questions short and uncomplicated. If they have no answers, leave it alone, you know?
So what else? In terms of, I just thought that's interesting, the parents need to focus maybe a little on themselves as well in all of this. So maybe expand on that.
Yeah, so our as all mammals regulate our nervous systems off each other. So that's why, you know, dogs are very calming. So you know the way we have dogs for autistic children.
Jesus.
Yeah, well, that's a dog that's nervous system isn't very calm. But you know the way we have the dogs for autistic kids.
Yes.
And that helps the autistic kid regulate their nervous system. But we regulate our nervous systems off each other. So if the adult can calm themselves down and is quite calm and is quite comfortable, the child will be calmer too.
Nice.
And I you can see it. I mean, I remember I was babysitting one of my friend's daughters and the child had been absolutely fine the 3 hours the child was with me. But her mother was super anxious and I could hear her mother walking up the garden path and the child started crying.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, you just see it, like the more anxious the parent is, the more anxious the child will be. Yeah.
You know, when you say about talking to the children as well, when do you talk to them? Do you talk to them when... Like, I'm just conscious again, say there's something going on, there's the football training you mentioned or the babysitter or there's some sort of event. and like that the tears are streaming and
no good talking to them then. Yeah, so there's no good talking to any person when they're overwhelmed and upset. And so you want to take them as you want to talk to them at a different time, and maybe sometimes don't make all your talks with kids so serious.
Well, that's the
talk to them while you're walking down to the shops.
I don't want to bring it up now. It's enough stress when we're dealing with it at the school gate. I don't want to talk about it when everyone's happy at home.
You know, talk while you're walking down to the shops or doing something more casual, right? Don't like make everything like kids have a different level of way of dealing with and understanding things and, you know, like sitting down and having a big rational discussion. A lot of it's not rational, right? Mm. Their rational processing isn't fully in place. So some of it's like, listen, mum and dad have to go and do this. We're going to need to leave you with a babysitter. I know that sometimes you get upset, but let's try and make a plan for that, you know. Yeah.
Listen, great advice, Isol. Thanks so many for coming in to us. Isol White, the psychotherapist and author.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.